we will skip the Capitol campaign video until immediately after the service. We will be showing it here. It's a 3-minute video, and we're going to be doing a brief presentation, and I really do mean brief. I'd invite you all to please come back into the sanctuary with your coffee after the service and hear us tell you a little bit about this Capitol campaign. How are we on the other one, Jerry? All right, I'm going to make a brief technical detour here. Hang on 2 seconds. God bless electronics. Huh?
Campaign or get a call?
Have the call ready. So today's order of service has quite a few announcements in it. Everyone is welcome to join in anything that we have listed there. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of who you love or what pronouns you use. So please, come and explore what community can mean for you. I'd ask at this point you silence all electronics, working or not, that you have with you today. This service is a little different than some of our services in that we are exploring the Muslim holiday of Mawlid. So you will hear traditional Muslim prayer at several points during the service.
We light our chalice today to remind us of the memory of Muhammad. All blessings be upon his name. And of those who have come to bring light into the world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn. Number 188, Come, Come, Whoever You Are. We are going to sing it once through together and then as a round until Doug lets us know when to stop.
Muslim faith and the man who founded it are a mystery to a lot of people in the United States. We hear a lot about Islam, but we don't do much to explore the ideas behind it or the man behind it. We're going to start today with a poem called In Praise of Prophet Muhammad. This is the level of devotion shown by some of the followers of Islam. Muhammad, Muhammad, how shall we praise you, Muhammad? Shall we call you Ahmad? He who is praised in heaven shall be praised here on earth. Shall we call you Mustafa, the chosen of God on earth? You have brought us the Quran. How shall we praise you, Muhammad? Shall we call you Rahman al-Salamaneen? God sent you as a mercy to the whole of creation. How shall we praise you, Muhammad? Shall we call you the king of Lalak? Even God says he created the universe for you. How shall we praise you? We gather here today to explore the birth and life of a man who never claimed to be divine. He claimed no miracles. He didn't rise from the dead. He lived and he wrote and he died. And he was so adamant that no one worship him, that he would not allow pictures of himself to be painted for fear they would be used as icons. And yet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, changed the world forever. And as we gather to celebrate Maulid, the birth of Muhammad, please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you this morning.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Heidi Peterson, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Let us look to Muhammad, his teachings, his life. Let us look to his teachings and gain more knowledge and context in the way of this life. Whether you are with us for the day or here for a lifetime, we are glad you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration.
In Islam, zakat is the word for charitable giving, and the obligation to give begins as soon as a child is able to understand the idea. One of the ways that we help our children to understand giving is by contributing to local food pantries. So if you've brought food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service, or ask a child to bring them forward for you, and I invite the children to stay up front for a story. Today we're going to be talking about Muhammad, the man who founded Islam. And it's kind of hard to talk about him because we don't have any storybooks with a picture of him. His whole life he wouldn't let anybody paint his picture. So we have no idea what he looked like. So Muhammad was born in the year 570, over 1,500 years ago. And people say that he was a prophet, that he talked to God. What we know is that his dad was 17 when he got married, so he was very, very young. Kaya, how old are you? 14, so 3 years older than Kaya, right there. Can you imagine being that young and having a little baby? But his dad got sick and died. His mom was 15, so a year older than Kaya. And she was left all alone with a little bitty baby. Well, back then, really rich people didn't raise their own kids. What do you think they did with them? Any guesses? If you were really rich and you lived in a town like Milwaukee, what you did was take your kids out to the farmland, in their case, out to the desert, and give them to somebody else to raise. Do you think that sounds like a good plan?
Not really.
Not really. So Muhammad's mother took him to a lady who lived way out in the desert, and she gave him to her to raise him. And so that woman kept him till he was 5 years old. He never saw his mom at all. 5 years. He never got to see his mom. And when he was five, she brought him back in. Only then his mom died. So his uncle decided that he was going to take him. And that was great. Muhammad liked his uncle very much. His uncle taught him to be honest. He taught him to always tell the truth. He taught him how to be a banker. Can you imagine learning how to be a banker when you're 12 years old? Does that sound like a lot of fun? No.
No.
Can you imagine having to sit at a desk and have people give you money and have to decide how much to give them back when you're 12 years old? No. You'd want to go out and play, right? Except Muhammad didn't want to go out and play. He learned how to be a merchant, and he learned how to be a shepherd. He was busy. And he got married at about 25, but he wasn't happy. He kept thinking, there's got to be something more to this. Now, if you had to be a merchant and a shepherd and a banker all before you were 25, wouldn't you think there was more to life than that? That doesn't sound like fun. So at 40, he had a strange feeling that he ought to go out and talk to somebody, but he didn't know who. So he goes out and he finds this cave. What do you think was in the cave? Any ideas?
Sticks?
Sand? Well, he got in there and he all of a sudden felt like he was no longer alone. So he very slowly looked over his shoulder. Then he looked over his other shoulder. And about then, a big voice said, "Don't be afraid!" How do you think that made him feel?
Scared.
And it was an angel. And angels in Arabic writing aren't soft and friendly with big wings. They're pretty huge. This angel was big. And the angel showed him a book, and it said, "Read!" loudly. But Muhammad had never gone to school. He didn't know how to read. So the angel hit him again, and he said, "I said, read!" And Muhammad said, "But I don't know how to read." So the angel picked him up and started to squeeze. And each time he squeezed, he said, "I told you to read it." And each time Muhammad said, "But I don't know how to read." And the angel would squeeze tighter and tighter. And by about the 15th squeeze, Muhammad said, "Okay, okay, I'll do anything you want. Show me again." Time. And by this time, he had memorized what the angel was saying, so he started to repeat it. So the angel showed him again the words and pointed to them, and this time Muhammad remembered what everyone was, and he repeated them back. And Muhammad knew that the words were important, so he listened carefully, and the angel let go of him and read them out slowly for him so he could remember. And he, Muhammad knew that the people would want to hear what the angel said. So he thanked the angel and he went out and he repeated the words. Muhammad was actually a pretty smart guy. So with a little help from an angel, he was able to start teaching people and leading them. And he never did get squeezed again. But he said he spoke to angels at many other times over a course of his life. We don't know how much of this is true. But we do know that Muhammad, when he was 40, started saying some pretty smart things. And people started to listen. Thank you all for listening to my story today. Could I have our lantern bearer? And would all of you help me in singing the children to the classroom? The song is called For You Shall Go Out. Words are in your order of service. May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. Charity or giving is important in Islam and in our own Unitarian Universalist faith. Zakat is the compulsory giving of a set proportion of one's wealth to charity. It's regarded as both a type of worship and as self-purification. It is the third pillar of Islam, the third idea upon which the entire religion rests. We enter into our giving ritual today, and we remember that it is through our generosity of spirit that we remain in right relation to the world around us. The morning offering will now be given and gratefully received. Thank you so much for all that you do and for these gifts given and received by our community. As a sacred home and as a family of seekers, we are here in part to bear witness and to hold one another in the moments of our lives that are the most fragile and the most beautiful. We're a community of human hands and human hearts, and this is the time in our service where we minister to one another. And we speak briefly about the good and the bad happening to us and to the world. Before the service, you're always welcome to silently light a candle at the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud together, and the worship associate lights candles for us. If you'd like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Bud and Sarah Hudson, and we would like to share some joys. First of all, the joys of our neighbors in Hartford, because we have moved from Hartford. And perhaps the concerns of our new neighbors in Wauwatosa, because we have just moved there. But we have had a delightful 21 years in Hartford and have loved being there. So we will have a combination of joys and concerns over the years. I'd like to share one other major concern, and that is for our daughter-in-law's father, Bob Sweeney, who is wrestling with prostate cancer, currently at stage 4 and currently at home hospice in Maryland. And our thoughts and prayers are going out to all of them in the family.
This is Sue. Yep. Two candles of joy. One that Bjorn celebrated his 18th birthday yesterday. Probably 17 of which have been part of this congregation. And two, that even though Bud and Sarah moved to Wauwatosa, they're here with us.
Sue also had a birthday there. I think it was 29.
Hi, this is Terry, and candle of joy. My father turned 94 yesterday.
This is Betsy, a candle of joy that, Amy, you will be representing us at the NRA demonstration next week, and a candle of concern for the issues of gun violence in our country.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows that we hold deeply in our hearts, but we have not been able to name aloud here today. As we celebrate the birth of the Prophet Muhammad, it's good to reflect on the ways in which various memories of Muhammad have continued to reverberate through Islamic society. This helps us put the relationship of the man to the religion in context. One of the loveliest has been through a distinctly Turkish tradition called Mevlud, which is spelled numerous ways, which recalls and celebrates the birth of the Prophet. These poems, which might well have been called the Nativity of Muhammad, they're recited on major life occasions. There is not too much emphasis on exactly which day was he born. That isn't the point. It was probably in June. The point is, these are a key part of the devotional life of Ottomans. There are multiple versions of the poems. Perhaps the most well-known and beloved is that by Suleyman Çelebi. So we are going to do portions of it today, courtesy of the great scholar of Islam, Anna Marie Schimmel, whose own engagement began with a deep affinity toward Turkish Islam and global Muslims. The poem begins, as any good birth narrative does, with a recollection of the mother's experience. In this case, Amina, Muhammad's mother, who according to Turkish custom is referred to as Lady Amina or Amina Khatun. Amina Khatun, Muhammad's mother dear, from this oyster came that lustrous pearl. After she conceived from Abdullah came the time of birth with days and weeks. As Muhammad's birth was drawing near, many signs appeared before he came. In the month of Rabi Awal, then on the 12th, the night of Monday, look, when the best of mankind was born, what marvels did his mother see? spoke the mother of that friend, I saw a strange light. The sun was like its moth. Suddenly it flashed up from my house, filled the world with light up to the sky. Heavens opened. Vanquished was the dark. And I saw three angels with three flags. One was in the east, one in the west. One stood upright on the Kaaba's roof. Rows of angels came from heaven and circumnavigated all my house. Came the Houris group on high. The light from their faces made my house so bright. And a cover was spread in midair called brocade. An angel laid it out. And when I saw so clearly these events, I became bewildered and confused. Suddenly the walls were split apart, and three Houris entered my room. Please join me now in a moment of silent reflection, meditation, or prayer.
The poem above begins with the recollection of Muhammad as a pearl, a pun in Arabic where the words were the words for pearl and orphan. They were similar. Muhammad, of course, was born as an orphan, and yet in the marvelous spirituality of the Turks, his orphan background is transformed him to becoming precious and pearl-like. The birth of Muhammad is told first through the experience of his mother, and the wonders that she beheld. The light fills her heart, and her house is circumambulated. Her house becomes like the Kaaba, as it were, and the various mentions of opening are reminiscent of the Quran's recalling of the need to have one's heart opened. The home of Amina becomes like a heart. All is illuminated. All is opened. The poem goes on to state, and some have said that these charming three, one was Asaya of moonlike face, one was Lady Mary without doubt, and the third a Houri beautiful. Then these moon-faced three drew gently near, and they greeted me with kindness here. Then they sat around me, and they gave the good tidings of Muhammad's birth, said to me, a son like this, your son, has not come since God has made this world, and the Mighty One will never grant such a lovely son as will be yours. You have found great happiness, O dear, for from you that virtuous one is born. He that comes is king of knowledge high, is the mind of Gnosis and Tawhid, monotheism. For the love of him, the sky revolves. Men and jinn are longing for his face. This night is the night that he, so pure, will suffuse the worlds with radiant light. This night, earth becomes a paradise. This night, God shows mercy to the world. This night, those with heart are filled with joy. This night gives the lovers a new life. Mercy for the worlds is Mustafa. Sinners, intercessors, Mustafa. Following the Quran, all Muslims celebrate the connection among various prophets, particularly the close connection among Abraham, Noah, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. Here, that same connection is reaffirmed through the female perspective by talking about how the luminous women through whom each of these channels of grace, Baraka, were opened up onto this world, gather around Amina, greeting her as Muhammad is born to her. The poem specifically mentions three female visitors for Amina, as it were the three wise and beautiful women, Moses' Asaya, Jesus' Lady Mary, and Ahuri, a celestial beauty. While in some recent imagination the term Huri has taken on a sexual content, here is the emphasis of purity on the Huri's beauty and chastity.
As has been characteristic of Muslim tradition, the important quality of Muhammad emphasized here is Ramatun al-Alamadin, the mercy to all worlds, a direct reference to the Quran. It is Muhammad who is seen as an intercessor for the sinners, the mercy for the world that is the object of Muslim devotion here. Just as the earth became like a paradise upon Muhammad's birth, those who recite the poem hope to turn their own homes and their own hearts and their own lives into ones filled with God's mercy. Echoes of the echoes of Muhammad reverberate. The Mevlud poem goes on to describe the very physical experience of birth, the magical experience where a life enters the world through a grace-filled opening, resulting in the opening of a new gate of mercy for humanity. This is unique between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. No one of the other two Ahambric religions focuses on women this way. This is the only one. And the poem says this: they described him in this style to me, stirred my longing for that blessed light. Amina said, when the time was ripe that the best of mankind should appear, I became so thirsty from the heat that they gave me sherbet in a glass. Drinking it, I was immersed in light and could not discern myself from light. Then a great white swan came with soft wings and touched my back with gentle strength, and the king of faith was born that night. Earth and heaven were submerged in light. Amina is much more than a vessel for carrying Muhammad. Her own experience is the mystical, important part. She was immersed in light. She couldn't discern herself from light. The whole world was illuminated. These passages all recall the strong tradition of illuminative contemplation in Islam, hearkening back to those Quranic verses that describe God as light of the heavens and earth. In both Sunni and Shia traditions, human beings are seen as reflecting light onto the world, light upon light. The next section of the poem is referred to as the Great Welcome, in which all of the cosmos joins in welcoming this newborn baby. This Muhammad is more than simply a child. He is a cure for pain. One who is not separated from God, a friend of God, upon who all will call to deliver them from sin. So these are the formal welcoming words. Welcome, O High Prince, we welcome you. Welcome, O Mine of Wisdom, we welcome you. O Secret of the Book, we welcome you. Welcome, O Medicine for Pain. O sunlight and moonlight of God, O you who are not separated from God, O nightingale in the garden of beauty. O friend of the Lord of power, O refuge of your community, welcome, O helper of the poor and the destitute. Welcome, O eternal soul, O cupbearer of the lovers, we welcome you. O darling of the beloved, O much beloved of the Lord, O mercy for the world. Welcome, O intercessor for the sinner, welcome. Only for you time and space were recreated. It was this version of Muhammad, this cosmic Muhammad, who served as the cause of creation, the Muhammad that God loved so much that if it were not for him, creation would not have been. This was who was the center of Ottoman devotion. Just as the moon reflects the light of the sun, so does Muhammad reflect the light of God onto the cosmos. This poem continues to be recited in Turkish homes today as it was in Ottoman times. A remarkable longevity in the devotional life of Muslims. And it is used to celebrate Maulid, to remind Muslims of who it is that is the center of their faith. As we contemplate the birth of the man who became the great treasure of Islam, please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 396 in the gray hymnal, I Know This Rose Will Open. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. This is the Shahada, the testament of Muslim faith. Many of you may have heard it before. It can either be seen as a warm and specific statement of belief, or as a call to fight in our America today. I have heard people become inflamed because of the use of the word Allah. There is no God but Allah. And no matter how hard I've tried to explain, that is the Arabic word for God. The statement is, there is no God but God. God is God. Repeating that statement in Arabic, it must be in Arabic, and meaning it, believing it, intending it, whether or not you actually speak Arabic, is the only actual requirement, the most basic requirement for becoming a Muslim. Muhammad is the human side of Islam, the human soul of Islam. And while many people learn something about the religious practice of the faith, non-Muslims often don't take the time to learn about the man himself. So who was this person who brought a third Abrahamic religion into being single-handedly? He wasn't a god. He wasn't a demigod. He never claimed to be divine. He never claimed any miracles. He never claimed anything miraculous happened to his mother on his birth. In fact, he denied it. He was fully and completely a human being and remained human throughout his entire life, despite everyone's attempts to claim he was more. He had a job. He showed up at work every day. He got married. He had children. He got old. He led his people to safety and freedom. And he died at 63. In his time period, he was an old man. He wasn't like Jesus. He didn't claim to be related to anyone divine. He was a prophet. He did say that he spoke with God, like Moses or Abram. And from the time he was 40 until his death, he preached a message, the Quran. And he tried to use his own life to provide an example of the message he was preaching. Now, for us today, that message may not sit well. It was a message of its time, and there are places it does not fit comfortably in modern life. Then again, the same can be said about Judaism. The same can be said about Christianity. For 23 years, Muhammad wrote the Quran, one verse and one section at a time. And even though it may be a little challenging for us to read today, at the time it was written, it was in the language of the people. It was in the common tongue. It was using words the way people used them. It was written so that the common man got it, so that the average woman understood. The modern equivalent to this would be a Unitarian Universalist minister starting to preach at 40 and writing down every sermon, word for word, as it was spoken, and putting them in a book, one after the other. 2,000 words at a time. And then dying. And saying right before death, here you go. Here's the instruction manual. I think I covered everything. These were sermons. The Quran was not meant to be deep meditational material. It was, this is what I am telling my people this week. This is what I am telling my community, my friends, my family. No walking on water. No crucifixion, no martyrdom. Nothing out of the ordinary. This man was not 7 feet tall. And he was so determined that no one ever, ever pray to him, that he was adamant about, you may not paint my picture. Just in case somebody would put it on the wall and pray to it. Modern life, we tend to get this backwards. We tend to say he thought he was so holy that he couldn't be represented. It was the opposite. According to legend, he would get so angry if someone suggested painting him that he would rebuke them in no uncertain terms.
according to a few other sources, he just yelled like heck. He wanted people to focus on the message. He didn't want anyone to remember or care if he was tall or short or fat or thin or light-skinned or dark. It didn't matter. So the center of Islam becomes a weird combination of the Quran and the stories about what Muhammad did and said. People haven't changed that much over 2,000 years. People love to tell stories, and they especially love to tell stories about important people or people they see as important. There are thousands of pages of stories about what Muhammad said and did that he didn't write. So the Quran is the piece he wrote. The books are the things other people wrote about him. The stories are a part of the culture. And according to Islamic writer Michael Wolff, together with the Quran, they form the canon on which Islamic law is based. In a less formal way, these reports of what Muhammad said and did are put to daily use as a yardstick against which people measure their actions and intentions. Wolff goes on to say, just as the words of Jesus are woven into the fabric of every European language, so that, believer or not, most everyone knows who to credit phrases like turn the other cheek, and the meek shall inherit the earth, and render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, so too for many Muslims, the words of Muhammad are on the tips of their tongue and can be easily recognized. Collections of the stories about Muhammad are published, and they're usually grouped into usable categories like the Book of Knowledge, or the Book of Prayer, or the Book of Charity. And most of the sayings in these are literally comments that Muhammad made to the guy standing next to him. These are not a learned man sitting in a seat of deep wisdom handing out knowledge. This is literally Muhammad sitting and eating a kebab, and the guy next to him says, hey, Muhammad, what do you think about this? And he answers him, and a student writes it down. This was the reality TV of the day. When you read these, read them in that sense. This was literally off the cuff, instant answer. Muhammad was saying stuff, and his disciples were going, oh, that was brilliant. Let me tell somebody else. He said things like, asking good questions is half of learning. He said, people with knowledge and those who seek it are the only two groups of any use to humanity. He said, three agents destroy religion: an ill-tempered scholar, a tyrannical leader, and an ignorant theologian. I like that one. When asked about being kind, he said, happy are those who find fault with themselves instead of finding fault with others. And I love his comments on morality. They speak to me on a deep level. He said, avoid anything that requires an excuse. And my favorite, this is my absolute favorite. If people had been forbidden to make porridge of camel dung, they would do it, saying it wouldn't be forbidden unless there was some good in it. His comment on pride is also one I enjoy. Strength does not lie in carrying heavy loads. Any camel can do that. The essence of strength lies in taming your temper and your anger. About prayer, he said this. During prayer, God lifts the veils and opens the gates of the invisible so that his servant is standing in front of him. Prayer creates a secret connection between the one praying and the one being prayed to. Prayer is a threshold at the entrance of God's reality. We celebrate Maulid not because it's a day of miracle and wonder, not because a star rose in the east or wise men came wandering through, but because it's a human holiday. This is a holiday about a human person born with wisdom to share. Muhammad, all blessings be upon him, provided others with a way to connect with God and live with integrity. And for any religion, we can debate over how well that's been carried forward into the future. But reading the original teachings, there is wisdom to be gained there, and it's worth looking at. And we celebrate today a rare holiday, one that is specifically about a non-deity human. Take some time this coming year and explore the wisdom of Muhammad. See if any of his teachings help you to illuminate your life. There is no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet. That was his sentence. What would yours be if you had to sum your belief and your faith into one sentence? What would your call look like? That is your challenge for this next year. Ameen. We have just a moment for a polylogue. If anyone has any comment they would like to make or any idea they would like to share, we do have about 5-6 minutes we can spend on a polylogue. So if anyone has anything they would like to share with the group, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
I don't have a comment. I have a question for you. I'm wondering if you have an answer.
Sure.
The term infidel, the way it's being used, etc., and supposedly they were supposed to kill infidels. Where did that originate, and how did that get into Islam?
Every one of the major religions has some sort of who's the outsider. And I'm sure it did come from Muhammad originally, recognizing a non-believer. But part of, and I've actually got part of the answer sitting here, when Muhammad was trying to unify his tribe and other local tribes, they had 8 years of fighting when he was preaching. He was trying to bring them all together so they would stop killing each other. That term came into heavy use then as they were trying to identify who the in-group was so that they would stop massacring each other. So I'm sure that is where that piece worked in. They didn't conquer Mecca till they had gotten about 10,000 people all cooperating. So you can imagine the kind of work it took for one man to manage to get that many tribes, people. I'm guessing it went into heavy rotation right about then. Good question.
This is Gus. I was happy to hear you use the image of light and the appreciation in Islam for intelligence and for education. As everyone here knows, the two of the most brilliant philosophers of the Middle Ages, Avicenna and Averroes, were both Arabs, and they picked up on a lot of the theology and philosophy of the classical world and were able to translate that using Aristotle's philosophy so that the Middle Ages and all the great Catholic and Christian theologians could do what they did. So Christianity's history of theology and church history owes a lot to Islam.
This is Greg. Like many of you, I like to consider myself a good religious liberal. And I think part of what that means is being open to taking wisdom from all the faith traditions. So in this way, I appreciate what you had to say. However, I think there's a special challenge. Well, let me say this first. As a religious liberal, I think there's versions of Christianity and versions of other religions that we can support. Yeah. However, as a religious liberal, I think condemning fundamentalist traditions and any tradition that claims a kind of certainty and our way is correct and absolute is highly problematic. And I think one of the special challenges of Islam is it's different. It's difficult with the Quran and what it says in the Quran for it to not be a fundamentalist tradition. Okay. And I think your claim that there were no miracles is problematic when his first, one of his original claims is that the Quran is the absolute word of God. So.
Yeah, I think Islam is one of the religions that challenges us the most as Unitarian Universalists because there are so few. Almost any other faith on the planet right now, we have some people within our congregations or a countable number of folks who say, oh, I'm a Unitarian. Oh, I'm a Baptist Unitarian. I was a former Lutheran. Muslim, not so much. And it's much harder given our current culture. So thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah. My children grew up playing with a group of kids, a family that was Islam. And I got to know these parents, and I got to know these kids, and I got to see their hearts. And I got to understand what happens when you're called to prayer five times a day. Yeah. I'm a struggling Zen follower, and I have a hard time sitting down twice a day to do my meditation. And I think to myself, in awe, where might I be in terms of my openness and my tolerance and my compassion if I sat five times a day, year after year after year, no break, no weekends off, five times a day every day?
Yeah. All right, well, thank you all very much. Go ahead. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 86 in the Gray Hymnal, Blessed Spirit of My Life. Allah, unite our hearts and set aright our mutual affairs. Guide us in the path of peace. Liberate us from darkness by your light. Save us from enormities, whether open or hidden. Bless us on our ears, our eyes, hearts, spouses, and children. Turn to us, most merciful. Make us grateful for your bounty and full of praise for it, that we may continue to receive it and complete your blessings upon us. Peace, Amin, and may it be so.